Well, before I start, I just wanted to acknowledge and dedicate this presentation to Dan Walters, who's been my advisor and unfortunately passed away last August. He was a great inspiration for me, not only as a scientist, but also as a person. And I'll be presenting some of the results from my master's project that we've been working with. We'll go over some of the considerations we took into account when assessing soil organic carbon, briefly materials and methods, and later how we analyze the impact of management practices on soil organic carbon, both on a spatial comparison and a temporal comparison. Now, in a simple term, soil organic carbon could be thought of as a balance between the inputs and the outputs of carbon to the system. Now, climate and soil types, as been said before, has a great impact on this balance. Climate, of course, determining the productivity of the region, therefore carbon inputs, but also the conditions for the composition and altering the carbon outputs. And soil types altering the capacity of that soil to retain the carbon. But in a given location, these two factors could be pretty much assumed constant. And therefore, we can analyze the management practices impacts, which are not as strong. So we were interested in the tillage treatment's effect to cropping systems and the nitrogen effect on a particular location. But when considering soil organic carbon, we believe long-term experiments are really important because especially generally variations of annual carbon stocks are relatively small compared to the huge carbon background. So for these small annual changes to be detectable, long-term, several years should be required. Secondly, consider the whole soil profile. Well, as has been shown before, small variations in the surface could be compensated by small variations at depth. If we limit our sampling to shallow depth, we would probably not be observing the whole picture of what's going on. And finally, expressing results on a constant mass basis. This allows a fair comparison by normalizing the effect of management practices in bulk density. So I will present my data on a constant mass basis, equivalent mass basis, but I'll give a reference that for easier interpretation. So one of my sites I analyzed was Northeast Nebraska, Concord, a site that had been established in 1985. It was basically split plow with four repetitions where we had tillage, we had no-till, disc, and plowing. Cropping systems present were continuous corn and corn soybean, and an array of N-widths, which were from 0.80 to 160 kilograms per hectare, applied as ammonium nitrate on corn. Now, the whole site was part of a farm that had been under continuous corn for approximately 15 years prior to the experiment. Experiment with rain set conditions. It had been sampled in 1997, and we sampled again in 2009. And I put some average yields from this site. As you can see, they're really low yields. Those are average for 25 years. Continuous corn and corn on the corn-soybean system and soybean on the different end rates. Now, we sampled in 2009 on a 0, 5, 5, 15, 15, 30 centimeter, and later on a 30 centimeter depth increment. But samples in 1997 were taken on a 30 centimeter increment. We sampled in spring before tillage took place to avoid grade changes by bulk density by the tillage. And we analyzed total soil carbon using an elemental analyzer, but we did check for free calcium carbonate. And several samples were taken for bulk density determination at the same depth intervals. Now, when determining the management practice effect on soil organic carbon, there could be two approaches. One would be a spatial comparison, where we would be comparing pretty much the soil carbon stocks and soils that have been under two different management practices. Now, for this, we should assume an equivalent initial starting point, and we will have a relative difference of the impact of the management. Or we can do a temporal comparison, which is basically comparing initial to final measurements at the same exact site, and we could compare rates of carbon change. This is, of course, somehow better, but it requires initial soil samples that are not always available. Now, on the surface, 30 centimeters of the soil shear spectrum in our research site, according to the NRCS, we can see that all the soil series pretty much have the same soil horizons, pretty much the same conditions. And they had all been on the same management for a long time previous to the initiation of the study. So we could assume an equivalent starting point for this small depth. But at greater depth, there's great variability in the types and width of the horizons present in our research site. So this starting point could not be assumed, and therefore we should use initial samples to compare it to them. Therefore, for the surface sample, we had a spatial approach. We just sampled the different soils on the different management practices and compare the relative soil organic carbon stocks under them. But then for the surface, for the deep samples, we used our 1997 samples and analyzed soil carbon trends over the last 12 years. Now, we did account for carbon inputs to the system. Corn and soybean yields were measured annually as well as corn stover. And due to certain assumptions, we estimate a mean annual residue carbon input, which the difference between the cropping systems increased, its N rate increased, up to a 23% more carbon input under corn soybean, under continuous corn than corn soybean. But this difference were never detectable in difference of soil organic carbon. There were never differences between continuous corn and corn soybean on the soil organic carbon stocks. Tillage effect, on the other hand, here's the results on a concentration basis for its interpretation. As you can see and expected, on the surface, no-till holds higher concentrations of carbon, and they sharply decrease as depth increases up to the 30 centimeters. This, on the other hand, had a little less concentration on the top 5 centimeters, but a more homogeneous distribution. But it's pretty much a redistribution of soil organic carbon in the profile. Now, when we adjust the values to a constant mass basis, the same trends are observed. As you can see, in the surface, 50 kilograms of soil per meter squared, which would be approximately the first 5 centimeters, no-till holds slightly higher content than disc, and that trend's reversed at depth, where disc has slightly higher contents than no-till. But mobile plow, on the other hand, has consistently less carbon than either disc or no-till throughout the surface 30 centimeters. Now, the effect of nitrogen we're really interested in. The surface 5 centimeters, which are 50 kilograms of soil per meter square, there was a slightly positive effect of nitrogen over all the tillage treatments. But in the following 5 to 15 centimeters, adjusted to 50 to 200 kilograms per meter square, there was an interesting interaction between tillage and nitrogen. As nitrogen rates increased, both soil organic carbon increased under both plowing and disc, but decreased under no-till. Now, we believe that a possible explanation for this is that the incorporation of residue carbon and nitrogen, which we tilled after nitrogen was applied, allow microbes to fix this carbon, and therefore we add increases. But on the no-till, since residue is left on the surface, leaching nitrogen from the broadcasted over the surface when arriving to this soil layer might be causing microbes to use soil organic matter as a carbon source, and therefore we add a decrease in our carbon. But finally, in the last step, in the 15 to 30 centimeter increments, there were practically no impacts of nitrogen. But when we consider the whole 30 centimeters after 25 years of the same management practices, those interactions were masked, and we can only see a really slight positive effect of nitrogen, only 3% increase after 25 years of the same practice, but a pretty important effect of tillage, where no difference was observed between disc and no-till, but they both, on average, had 12% more carbon than disc had. Now, when we used our 97 samples and analyzed the last 12 years, the same samples were taken from the exact same locations as a small plot that have around 5 meters by 10 meters. Cropping system, the nitrogen fertilization had no effect or no impact on, no detectable impact at least, on soil organic carbon. So I would present only data from tillage. In the surface 400 kilograms of soil, which are passing the first 30 centimeters, as you can see, all of the tillage treatments had a considerable loss in their soil organic carbon content. And here it's in kilograms of soil per, kilograms of carbon per meter square, I'm sorry. As you can see, plowing was losing considerably more carbon than either disc or no-till, but 12 years were not long enough to statistically detect these differences, as we had seen when we analyzed the 24 years. Now, in the following 400 kilograms of soil, which is approximately the depth from 30 to 60 centimeters, it's pretty obvious no-till and disc have had no change in their soil organic carbon throughout these 12 years. But they're still losing carbon on the plowing. We've lost almost half a kilogram per meter square of plow. Now, since plowing, of course, disrupts soils to a greater depth, this aeration, that depth, could be causing the oxidation of soil organic matter and the decrease in levels. And finally, in the last 800 to 1200 kilograms of soil per meter square, which would be approximately 60 to 90 centimeter depth, as expected, management practice had little, no impact on the sort and carbon stock. But what's interesting is that having initial soil samples allowed us to discriminate what was soil variability to what was soil change through management, due to management. So in conclusion, for the conditions, given conditions of our site, cropping systems did not differ in the soil organic carbon content, so there's no difference between continuous corn or corn soybean. Nitrogen fertilization had a slightly positive effect, but more than 12 years were required to observe these differences in the surface. And finally, on the tillage, well, as expected, plowing lost, there were higher losses of carbon on the plowing, but surprisingly no difference between milking and this. And to detect these differences, even in the surface 30 centimeters, we required more than 12 years. Now, this is the picture of the research site. You can see the nice, the corn with the different end rates. This is a zero end rate for 24 years. So there's, it was impacting to see no difference, no impact of by rotations, given what was pretty obvious at the surface. We did find some inorganic carbon at the deepest 90 to 120 centimeters depth. These amounts were really small, and we could when we ran analysis with and without treatment to eliminate the natural shift of variation in our machine could not overlap this amount of carbon. So there were really small amounts. No, we did not measure soil pH. Not through all samples. We have some samples to have an idea of what soil pH was, but we did not do that each and every sample.
But with the lower depth, you could have some changes in some of the edge. You know how much, you
have
an idea of
change.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have 2 minutes. So two more minutes. Any questions more? For example, and
we could not assume that. Let me. We did see a lot of variations in the site. That's why we used the initial samples. So we actually measured rate of change in each experimental unit compared. In the surface, in the first 30 centimeters, my impression after analyzing the data is we could assume that there was an initial starting point. But at depth, it's pretty obvious there was a great range of variability. Even doubling from one side to the other in the amount of carbon. So if we would have analyzed just one sampling day, our results would be pretty confusing, actually. Having the initial samples really helped, especially at depth where the variability was impressive, to discriminate what was soil variability and what was due to management practices.